Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's Heart 1032, available on the web at heart1032.com.au.
Well, he is perhaps Australia's foremost social researcher. 15 years ago, he wrote a book called Reinventing Australia that mapped the mind and mood of the 1990s. Now, psychologist Hugh Mackay is back with Advance Australia Where, and we thought he'd be the person to give us a snapshot of where Australia's at, how we've gotten here, and where we're going. Hugh Mackay, welcome to Open House tonight.
Thank you very much, Sheridan.
Now, we need to clarify something. Everybody I know who knows of your work calls you Hugh Mackay. I've always called you Hugh Mackay. I've heard a whisper that it's actually Hugh Mackay.
I do call myself Mackay.
Do you? my apologies.
No. You're in the vast majority. Everybody calls me Mackay, except the family. I think our family came to Australia from Durham in England. How we got to Durham is still a bit of a mystery, but I think the pronunciation was anglicised at that point. Although, if, as one branch of the family believes, we came from Ireland to Durham, then probably it was always Mackay.
Is that right? Okay. Mm. Well, we need to get some sort of public relations campaign happening for you. Well, congratulations on the new book, and I think a lot of people will be anticipating it, given the fact that so many people read Reinventing Australia, and this is to some degree a bit of an update 10 or so years later. Now, describe this term kaleidoscope nation that you use to describe us right now.
I think it's an accurate term. If you think of a kaleidoscope being that cylinder that you look into where patterns form, and then almost as soon as you've got used to them, they've dissolved and a new pattern has reformed and so on. That seems to me to be a pretty good little metaphor for what's been happening to Australia over the last 15 years, certainly, but really longer than that, over the last 25 or 30 years, where almost every aspect of Australian society has been changed to some extent, in some cases radically, in most cases significantly. By that, to be specific, I mean things like the roles of men and women, the institution of marriage, the birth rate, the nature of family life, the size and composition of the typical Australian household, our attitudes to work and our sense of the security or insecurity of our jobs, the distribution of wealth, the impact of the information technology revolution on the way we live, the way we work, the way we communicate with each other, even our sense of ourselves, of what it means to be an Australian, the whole idea of the multicultural society, our relationship to the region, to our traditional links to Britain, and now more recently the US, and our ties to all the birthplaces where Australians have come from. Put all that together, I think kaleidoscope is a pretty good description.
Yes, I think you're right, and I think it probably does describe why so many of us are still grappling with so much of that change too, when things have changed so quickly. Well, let's explore some of those areas you just touched on there. Would it be fair to say that we as a nation right now are working harder, consuming more, but relating less?
Yeah, I think that's a very good summary, Sheridan. We are... I should qualify the first bit. Many of us are working harder. The full-time workforce is working such long hours that about a third of people with full-time jobs wish they could work less. The full-time workforce absorb about 500,000 full-time jobs in their overtime alone. So they're doing their own jobs, plus about 500,000 other full-time jobs. Whereas at the other end of the spectrum, we've got a major problem, which we don't tend to talk about much. We brag about how we've got unemployment down to about 4%, which is terrific, but underemployment, that is people who haven't got as much work as they want, is still a major problem. The Bureau of Statistics tells us at the moment there are about 1.8. If you put the unemployed and the underemployed together, you've got about 1.8 million
right.
Australians. So some are not working, and most of those people just either want a job or want a lot more work. So that's a very mixed picture, but the rest of your proposition, I think, is very true. That we have been through a period of rampant materialism. We're buying more stuff. I think we almost as a means of insulating ourselves from the anxieties and the stresses that inevitably arise from all of this change. a lot of us have taken refuge in materialism and have thought, if you know, we could almost define our worth in terms of our wealth or our possessions. Well, that's obviously, I mean, history tells us that's a dead end, but we have been going up it a bit in the last 10 or 15 years. And communicating less, an interesting point. I mean, I discuss this in a chapter in the book about the information technology revolution. I do make the observation that we have more and more exchange of data, but less and less of what we feel as real communication, that so much of what we're doing is text messages, emails, chat rooms, etc., that sometimes I think we do forget that it's face-to-face personal interaction that really counts when it comes to building and maintaining relationships.
Yes, and your point there about materialism and how history shows us it just doesn't work. Are we any closer to actually questioning materialism right now, since we've kind of gone back into a phase of it? Are we any closer as a nation to saying, okay, well, maybe it's not working?
Yes. The good news, and it is good news, I think, a major theme towards the end of the book is that we, as a result of all of these stresses on us and so on, we kind of retreated into what I describe in the book as the dreamy period, which is been a time of disengagement, of material indulgence, not much interest in politics, not much interest in social issues, homelessness, poverty, the third world, asylum seekers, all of these things. Not so compassionate, not so tolerant, a bit more prejudiced, but also very into stuff and you know, retail therapy and material comfort and all that stuff. But the major theme of the book is that there are signs that we're emerging from that dreamy period. And one of the signs, in fact, one of the things that went on, I think, over the course of that dreamy period, which has lasted about 7 or 8 years, is that a lot of people, while they were disengaging from the big picture, they were getting a bit more, it's a bit like a retreat. You know, you go on a retreat, you disengage from the pressures of your normal world, and you go into a period of introspection and reflection. And I think millions of Australians have been doing that, have been thinking, well, there's actually more to life than all this stuff. You know, we don't want to raise our kids to be greedy little competitive individualistic materialists. And I think there has been, led, by the way, by the rising generation of young Australians who are often maligned, often criticised, but I come out of this analysis feeling very optimistic about them. And I think they have been leading the charge towards saying, look, there's actually more to life than that. All this material prosperity is great. We love being comfortable. We like having top-of-the-range Nike, et cetera, but we know there's more to life than that. And they've been leading the charge to some revival of interest in formal religion, but even less formal explorations of spirituality and non-material values. And I think that the upside of this dreamy period is that as a result of all of that reflection, we're perhaps getting ready to re-engage with politics, with the environment, with social issues, but with our priorities having actually shifted a bit, so that we're coming into it again not in quite the same way that we left it towards the end of the 90s.
Right. Well, social researcher and psychologist Hugh McKay is with us tonight. We're talking about his new book, Advance Australia Where. Hugh, in the book, you actually talk about us redefining marriage and divorce, and you talk about the role that our pursuit of perfection plays in that. And I found that really interesting. Explore that for us.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a disease at the moment, Sheridan. I think we're in the grip of a sort of cult of perfectionism. And it's hard to say quite where this came from, although I think it has to do with the period we've been going through, where we have been a bit more materialistic, where we wanted the best of everything and everything to be perfect. I think in relation to marriage and the family, it's partly because we are a society that's now marrying much later and divorcing more often. So people, that's to me not a sign that people are taking marriage less seriously. It's a sign they're taking it more seriously. But they might be taking it too seriously. I mean, that sounds ridiculous to say that, but it may be that because we are postponing marriage and because we are relatively easily able to extract ourselves from an unsatisfactory marriage, we might be setting the bar too high. We might be thinking that, you know, there is the perfect marriage, and if we're not having it, well, then we better chuck it away and see if we can get a perfect one.
Okay.
And because the birth rate is so low and there are now so few kids relative to total population, parents do seem to have got this kind of perfectionist bug about parenting, as though, well, look, I've only got one or maybe two, so they've got to have a perfect life. They've got to have the perfect teacher in the perfect school. You know, they've got to have the perfect sports coach and all this sort of stuff. I think it's, you know, people, even when people do marry, they've got to have the perfect wedding, you know, the perfect video. It's a message that I'm hearing more and more, and it does sort of vaguely disturb me. It does suggest to me that people are setting a silly standard for themselves and not accepting that we're all flawed, we're all frail, we all have our foibles, every relationship has its ups and downs, and really the ultimate joy in life is to be found in soldiering on. And I mean, obviously, there are times when you can't, you know, where things really do have to break apart. But I think the idea that there's real satisfaction in building a relationship over the long haul is something we might be losing sight of, as though we're expecting perfection to just fall out of the sky.
Yeah, just listening to what you're saying there, I wonder if our pursuit of perfection, where does that leave values like forgiveness and acceptance? Because to some degree, maybe there isn't a role for forgiveness if you pursue perfection, if you can't find it in your spouse or in your product or whatever, but well, you just get rid of it.
Yes. Yeah, I'm afraid that is the danger. You know, I think this mad idea that you can have everything from the perfect latte, you know, to the perfect child, is likely to make us less forgiving, less tolerant of other people's shortcomings, and of course that's a dangerous way to live, because.
Yeah.
You're going to spend your life searching for the person without shortcomings.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about children then, Hugh. Our children, the current generation's children, could we call them Generation Z, I guess now? We've had X, Y, maybe it's Z. You say in the book they're going to be the smallest generation in Australian history. Now, what ramifications does that have for us in the future?
It's a fascinating... There are a number of things that are happening at the moment that I think make... the, you know, what's going to happen to Australian society over the next 15 years, a really interesting question. I'm excited to be here. Like the shrinking household is another thing we might talk about, but certainly the shrinking generation of children relative to total population, yes, the smallest generation ever produced in Australia's history. I think it's going to be quite tough for these kids. I think the fact that we do have an aging population and more focus on the elderly, less focus on children, except by their parents, of course, by these obsessive perfectionist parents. I think they're going to carry two big burdens. One is over-parenting, overzealous parenting, I think, because of the falling birth rate, parents tend to be... We've seen it in China with the one-child policy, the so-called little emperor syndrome, and I think we've got plenty of little emperors and empresses emerging in Australia as a result of the falling birth rate. But the other burden I think they're going to carry is something I vaguely worry about in relation to the next 10 or 15 years, and that is that we seem to be becoming, again, as a direct result of the falling birth rate, I think we're becoming a less child-friendly society. So I think a lot of these kids are going to move out through their adolescence or childhood and adolescence. They're going to move out into a society where they're going to find that not everyone feels that they're quite as precious and important as their parents think. there's already a strong demand for child-free restaurants, you know, child-free apartment blocks, child-free resorts. I've heard in my research several times over the last 12 months people saying they wish they could pay a premium to buy a ticket on a child-free flight, especially an international flight.
Yeah.
Now, this is an attitude I've not encountered before, and I think it does suggest that we're just not quite, as a society, we're not quite as enthusiastic about kids as we used to be.
Hmm. Hugh McKay is our guest on Open House tonight. Hugh, let's talk about the spiritual surge then and the religious search of Australians. When you walk into people's lounge rooms and you hold these discussions, you get this research and this feedback, what are you seeing then on the religious sphere?
Well, there are two ways to approach this, Sheridan. I mean, obviously, we can look at the hard facts, which show that church attendance in Australia has been in very sharp decline, and we're down now to about 15% of Australians who attend church regularly. So that's so regular church attendance is now quite an eccentric activity in Australian culture, though there has been a bit of a surge in the last few years, particularly among what are loosely described as fundamentalist religious groups, particularly Pentecostalist. I think it's fair to say the whole Hillsong, Christian City Church, Assemblies of God thing has been remarkable.
Yep.
That's now number two to the Catholics in terms of regular church attendance ahead of the Anglicans.
Mm-hmm.
But more broadly, I think, and I think your question is broader than just church attendance, and more broadly, the thing that I've noticed over the last few years, and which I report in the book, is much more open discussion about spiritual issues and religious questions, even though a lot of people still want to avoid the word religion, they are exploring what we would really think of as religious topics. Much more interest, for example, in the religious beliefs of politicians.
Yes.
much less embarrassment than there used to be about discussing people's religious beliefs or their interest in religion. I mean, even the little spate of books we've had from atheists over the past few years, especially Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion and Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great, etc. I think even these books, which are very engaging, interesting, quite persuasive books, a lot of people are engaging with that, not because they're atheists or necessarily drawn to atheism, but because they're interested in the entire topic. And I think those books help to stimulate, you know, even if they're an attack on some varieties of religious faith, they help to stimulate this conversation that we seem, once again, to be very willing to have.
Yeah. Well, it's a very fascinating time in our history, and I think we could explore more of these topics that you've raised, probably for weeks and weeks on end. We'll probably have to leave it there for the time being, but I hope we can do that again sometime, Hugh, because it is fascinating.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to do that. I've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks, Sheridan.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time, Hugh.
My pleasure.
That is Hugh McKay. You might know him as Hugh McKay. We've heard it tonight from him. Hugh McKay is the proper pronunciation. The new book is called Advance Australia Where, and it's published by Hatchet.
We hope you enjoyed this Heart 103.2 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit heart1032.com.au.